Disgraced money manager Bernard Madoff awaits trial in what is alleged to be the largest financial fraud in history. A question many are asking is, how did he get away with it for so long without anyone discovering it? There were warning signs. It's virtually impossible to have returns like Madoff reported. So how do you check out your advisors and investments to make sure they are legitimate? Joining us today to talk about that and share her thoughts on the current economic situation is Pam Kruger, producer and host of PBS's Money Track and author of The Money Track Method, a step-by-step guide to investing like the pros. Welcome back to the program, Pam.
Great to be here.
Yeah. All right. First up, Bernie Madoff. A lot of people lost a lot of money, and I'm sure they're asking themselves, how could this happen?
I'm sure everybody is looking at that right now. I know a lot of other people who were not wealthy who have financial planners in everyday life, and all of a sudden they've been just freaked out by the idea that maybe, just maybe, they don't know anything about where their money is really being invested through their financial advisor or their money manager.
Right. And this is kind of, I guess it comes down to that trust thing. A lot of people are trusting people to be doing the right thing with their money.
And in this case with Madoff's situation, this was a very typical scam in the sense that people were buying into his sales pitch through other people, word of mouth. So it was the country club circuit. And we're all sort of guilty of this. When you want to find a good dentist or you want to find a good doctor, you ask a friend. And you tend to take that referral very seriously and prioritize it as a really good referral instead of doing any checking yourself. Well, the assumption is that the dentist and the doctor are, you know, credentialed, they're licensed, they're in practice. There's a lot of assumptions being made there. With financial advisors, they know that. Scam artists know that. Mm-hmm. And that's how they go about getting their clients.
Right. So how do you check out, then, your investment or your advisor? I mean, as we said, here's Bernie Madoff with this reputation as a top-notch investor. So I guess the first thing they may have done wrong is they didn't check him out themselves. He's different than this is sort of a unique situation.
Yeah, what's untypical, now I just mentioned what is typical, the fact that word of mouth, a lot of times these scam artists can get their victims, their potential victims, through word of mouth by, you know, making their proposition so alluring that, you know, you just have to get on board. But what is untypical about this Madoff situation is that he was hiding in plain sight. He was the former president and chairman of the NASDAQ. Now, this is someone who, this is really unusual. Most scam artists are not smack in the middle of a spotlight like that. That's right. Why the regulators and everybody from the top down, the SEC, it was the emperor's new clothes. Right. Everybody assumed, since he was who he was, everything must be
okay.
Great.
Yeah. So how do you check them out then? If you've got, like you said, there's a lot of people going, oh my gosh, what's happening with my financial planner or my investments? How do you check them out?
That's one of the silver linings of this whole story, is it really calls our attention to the fact that what we don't know and what we do need to find out. And it's really, really easy to find out because every state has a database through their state securities regulator. Every state has one. And you can go to the website. As a matter of fact, it's the North American State Securities Administration, NASAA. NASA, not the space people, but the securities people. And what you do, or you can go to the SEC, either or. You enter the advisor's name and the name of the firm, whether it be a brokerage firm or whether it be just an independent investment advisor, such as Madoff would have been. Mm-hmm. And then you enter, you know, any other relevant information that you have. But even just having the name is enough. Now, what that does is it pulls up right online, right in front of you, a rap sheet for that advisor. And you can see how many times has that advisor ever been fired. What complaints from clients are on file? Have they ever been sued? You know, things like that. Have they ever done jail time?
Right.
You know, stuff like that you want to know. And you know what? It's all there.
Yeah. One of the things I know that you have said a lot is you really have to know where your money is. This is a learning experience, I think, for a lot of people. Trusting somebody else with your money and not knowing where your money is and what it's doing, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble.
There's a big difference between, I don't know, somehow we've made the leap from portfolio advisors, where you want to go to somebody to advise you on your money, all of a sudden to portfolio managers. Big difference. When you're handing over your money, you're giving a limited power of attorney to that advisor. And that means that he or she is going to make decisions on your behalf and buy and sell without you being part of the decision. So while you're sleeping or you're vacationing, they're buying and selling.
Right. And so this is, again, I guess, an opportunity to learn more about the process. You think that as we go to our financial planners, we should be learning from them about how to manage our own money.
I do think that that's the correct approach if you want to hang on to your money. If you really want to make sure you're protecting yourself and you don't want to get scammed, you're going to do two things. You're going to check out the advisor's background and make sure that he or she is in the state's database. And if that advisor is not found in that database, you run. Don't walk. Run. Amscray. Get away as fast as you can, because it means they don't want to be tracked. Mm-hmm. Again, that wasn't what Madoff was about. He was in plain sight, but he was an exception. 90% of the scams that are out there involving investments are folks who are not registered or licensed, and no one ever checked to see if they were. And then number two, it's the expectation. What do you expect if you go to a financial advisor or a financial planner?
Sound advice, yeah.
Okay, advice, that's smart. You're looking to participate in decisions. You kind of want to stay checked in with what's going on. But some of these folks in this industry want you to be bedazzled and be so impressed with their expertise. And they'll use jargon, and they'll talk about things that are seemingly way over your head. And all of a sudden, you check out. You're totally checked out of the relationship. And then pretty soon, it's a you handle it thing.
Right.
And that's where you cross the line and you start to give up control. And I say, why give up the control? You know, if anybody can learn it, and if that investment advisor is smart enough to have, you know, accumulated all of this knowledge, certainly you can, you know, understand the basics and understand where your money's being invested, how it's being invested. And then the other big thing is you never want to write a check to the financial advisor personally. So if Mindy Todd, if you're my financial advisor and you're saying, okay, Pam, we'll make a $100,000 investment, which by the way, I can't do right now. So don't ask.
Okay.
I would not write the check to Mindy Todd. I would write the check to Charles Schwab. Mm-hmm. I would write it to Fidelity. I would write it to Bank of America. I would write it to the bank or the investment bank, which there aren't very many of those anymore, a commercial bank. Who is the fiduciary for the money? And you know what that does? It means that I can pull up statements online from the bank or the brokerage firm where my money is really being held. Because if it goes to Mindy Todd, it's going to you.
I may or may not put it in the right place for your benefit.
And you may or may not be investing the money the way you say you are, because I'm only going to see your statements.
Right.
I'm never going to see anybody else's.
Yeah, good advice. We're talking with Pam Krueger, producer and host of PBS's Money Track. She's also the author of The Money Track Method, a step-by-step guide to investing like the pros. Now, when we learned that Madoff's hedge fund was not what many thought it was, will that intensify redemptions from other hedge funds? And in turn, what effect will that have on stock prices?
It already has.
It has?
It's already started that domino effect. I think a third, something like a full one-third of the hedge funds out there have just absolutely, you know, almost gone out of business, or they are out of business right now because clients calling and saying, okay, that was fun, but now I want my money back.
Right.
Do you have my money?
Right.
So yeah. It was a big wake-up call. And don't forget, hedge funds are not for, you know, they're not for average investors. They're not for people who are making $50,000 or $100,000 a year. I mean, the whole allure of the hedge fund is we can do things with your money as a hedge fund that a mutual fund, a plain old vanilla mutual fund or a 401k plan cannot do. Because they're operating a lot of times in an environment that's just not anywhere near as regulated as the securities industry. So it becomes the secret squirrel investment club strategy.
Do you see more regulation coming then?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But I don't think that they know where to begin. Mm. I mean, they have to unravel this thing. And when they do, and they really look at why the SEC was not following up on the leads from the investigator, the Boston-based investigator, then they're going to have to answer a lot of questions. We haven't seen any of that happen yet. Stay tuned for the movie.
Right.
I mean, this is a feature film. You couldn't script this stuff.
Yeah. Now, we've heard differing opinions from economists as to what lies ahead in 2009. The unemployment rate has jumped to 7.2% from 6.8% in November. That's the highest in 16 years. Further job reductions are likely to erode consumer spending, which accounts for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity. So do you see things getting worse before they get better?
I think that something like 52 economists were just polled just recently, Wall Street Journal, and most of those economists, and these were, you know, very, you know, well-known, highly respected economists across the country. And I think the consensus was end of 2009, start to see some light at the end of the tunnel. Will it get worse first? I don't know, because we don't know what other shoes have yet to drop.
Right.
I mean, we're not now in the business. Anybody in the business of predicting what's going to happen next is, you know,
well, it's just
anybody's
like,
guess.
When you think of, you know, we started seeing all this stuff on Wall Street, and then who knew that the Bernie Madoff scandal was going to come behind it? So like you said, there's so much going on that it's really hard to say. Looking at some optimistic trends, I wanted to mention Boston Federal Reserve Chief Eric Rosengren, in a speech to the Massachusetts Mortgage Brokers Association last week, said there are indications that the second half of the year will show improvement. And he cites Fed actions have helped lower interest rates, energy prices have fallen, and a new stimulus package that many expect to pass Congress could also provide an economic boost. So again, he's another one who's seeing maybe some impacts on the economy
now,
late 2009.
We may see energy prices go back up again. You know, I think oil is looking like it's, you know, the price of gas is going to come back up. That's going to have a little bit of a pinch on consumers. So there's one thing you're just mentioning right there that I can pluck out and say, well, that's a variable that will have an impact. But consumer spending is down. I think it's down to its lowest level since 1980. But that's really, I mean, the paradox of that is that, you know, the consumers are saving more. They're really finding, when I say consumers, I'm talking about us, you know, just overall going to the mall. I think we're figuring out that frugality is kind of in style and greed is out, you know. And I think that with that, we're going to see our savings rate go from zero to maybe 0.1. But I mean, the point is that we will begin probably to see saving rates actually come up. And that
it's
really paradoxically hurts the economy.
That leads to my next question, which is when you're talking about everyone is feeling very anxious about their jobs. I just mentioned the unemployment rate, 7.2%. And everybody says, gosh, you know, am I going to lose my job? Is my husband going to lose my job? You know, the impact on the family. So how much should you have in your savings account?
If you're making $40,000 a year, make it a goal. I mean, I'm not saying today you should have $15,000 extra cash cushion saved, but boy, make that a goal. And get aggressive about it. And I really do believe that one of the silver linings of all of the bad news, because, I mean, we're being told day after day after day that, you know, that we're in horrible shape, everybody's suffering, worst economic and financial crisis since the Great Depression. We keep being told how bad it is. And in a really weird way, that is a silver lining because it forces us to really pay attention to the savings cushion that we really need to have. So it's a goal. I say by the end of 2009, you know, why not just agree, you know, with your spouse that that is the priority. And you're going to find a way to find fun at home. You know, the stupid term staycation, which is so goofy, but it's true. People are figuring out that you don't have to borrow every single month to have a good life.
Right. Well, and that's the staycation. Let's look where we live. Cape Cod, for God's sakes, there are people who pay lots of money to come here on vacation. So a staycation on Cape Cod is not a bad thing.
It's 31 degrees
right now. But most of us aren't taking our vacations right now either.
But you could stay inside and knit sweaters, but you can do fun things and it doesn't have to involve going to the mall. You know, to borrow for the lifestyle.
Well, speaking of borrowing, a lot of people have a lot of credit card debt. And I know one of the things anybody will advise you is to get rid of that debt as soon as possible. Is it better off to get rid of that credit card debt before you start saving?
No, it's better to try to do both at the same time, actually. And to really look at it, it depends on your own situation. If you have really super high rate cards and you're in such a conundrum that you cannot negotiate those rates down because your credit score isn't high enough and your credit score is not going to be high enough until you pay it down, then I would say if you're in that kind of a situation, you probably want to put more money toward the credit cards. and get aggressive there.
And save a little bit in the savings.
But not at the expense of completely not saving every month. Something happens psychologically when we start to save and we see money in our bank accounts. Suddenly we get very possessive and we say, I don't want to spend that money.
Yeah,
and it's a
and
good
it does
thing.
It's kind of surprising how quickly it does add up. You know, there's always the direct deposit where you don't actually see it going from your paycheck into your savings account. That's I guess a good trick to.
I'm a huge
get it there.
Fan of using technology to enrich in yourself, and that's the best way to do it.
Right.
Is just take that money out right off the top and agree with your spouse that that's what you're going to do, and you're going to take. You really want that to happen.
Right.
We're talking prioritizing.
We're talking with Pam Krueger. She is the host and producer of PBS's Money Track, and she's also the author of The Money Track Method. Let me ask you this, going back to consumer spending for a second. You know, we're talking about all this horrible news that we're hearing, what a bad situation we're in. And of course, that affects consumer spending. People say, well, gee, maybe I better not buy that new car right now or that big screen TV or whatever it is they have their eye on. So the media, in a sense, does affect what consumers spend by the reports that they're having. Now, we've talked about the stimulus package that may or may not pass Congress, waiting to see what happens there. That would be likely would be something, though, that might boost consumer spending, wouldn't it?
Right,
if we did have this, it probably
would. Yeah. And we'll see.
Yeah.
That's a big,
Yeah, so
we'll
a lot
see.
Of little details there to be worked out.
I personally am not as concerned about spending for the sake of the economy as I am fortifying my own position at home, very personal finance,
mm-hmm. right.
and really looking at my own situation in 2009 and, just really
assessing
prioritizing.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
All right. You have told the story of Earl, the parking lot attendant, who never made more than $12 an hour and yet was able to pay off his mortgage, send his kids to private school. He's worth over $1 million. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this a while back when you mentioned, if he can do it, anybody can do it kind of a story. But I'm wondering two questions. What's happened on Wall Street? Is Earl still a millionaire? And secondly, can what he did be done in this current economic climate?
Well, the component of Earl's net worth being over $1 million, half of it is in stock portfolio and the other half of it, or maybe less than half, is in his home equity. And he owns his house. So that's still intact. Mm-hmm. On paper, his portfolio has taken a hit, just like everybody else, but not quite as much because he shifted some of his money already away from stocks. So he has taken a hit, but not as big of a hit. So he's probably under $500,000 mm-hmm. on his stock portfolio. So he's probably just under $1 million on paper. But that brings up a really good point. It's remember back a few years ago when everybody on the Cape was, excited about the euphoric mm-hmm. about finding out that their house is now worth $600,000 and they paid $354,000 it 2-3 years ago. And therefore, on paper, that made them paper millionaires, if
right.
you want to put it that way. It's the same thing when the market is down. And a guy like Earl Crawley is 68 years old and been investing for 40-something years. He has seen every kind of market and then some. I mean, even markets that are almost as bad as now and protracted lasted longer, back in the 70s, and yet he still invested with the mentality of buy low, sell high.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the buy low.
Right.
This is that time.
Right. So if you have money, this is a perfect time to be buying stock.
This is a perfect time to start learning.
Learning.
And really looking at your own approach to investing. Mm-hmm. And what an exciting time to get educated about dividend paying stocks mm-hmm. that are high quality blue chip stocks that haven't been this cheap since, right. Leave It to Beaver was in prime time.
A great opportunity for that. My next question was going to be not all stocks. This might not be the best time to buy just any stock.
Give you a perfect example. I just went on vacation to see my mom in Florida. My sister says to me, I'm going to buy GM. Because GM is so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying if it's a good bet or a bad bet. I'm saying it's a bet. And I'm asking her, why bet when you can buy other companies that are just as cheap and paying dividends?
Right.
And they're not in that kind of trouble.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
So we have a tendency to go back to that mentality of speculating when my whole message is this is the time to get educated on the basics because guess what? Here's the biggest joke of the whole thing, the biggest secret. That's where the payoff is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the basic, patience-driven investing that Earl Crawley teaches us. And by the way, I didn't mention this, but I met with John Bogle mm-hmm. a couple of days ago in Pennsylvania, founder of the Vanguard Funds, and he manages more than $1 trillion of other people's money. And I asked him, I go, now, John, you're always talking about long term. What do you mean? 5 years, 10 years? He's like, try 50.
Wow. 50. Now, there are a lot of folks maybe listening that may not have 50 years to wait for, you know, a lot of retirees here on the Cape and the people who are about to retire.
But they still have another 15 or
yes,
20.
Right. I guess at some point, the stocks don't make sense to you. If you're in your 80s.
Because when we're talking about investing, we're not just talking stocks. We're yeah. talking bonds. We're talking the mix.
Right. So I guess diversification is the key, right?
It's exactly the same thing as the food groups, basic food groups, real quick. You know, you've got, bread, you've got fruits, you've got vegetables, you've got meat. You mix it up and you make a meal. It's the same thing. If you can learn how to cook, you can learn how to invest. You mix the bonds, you mix the real estate, you throw in some stocks. As you age, fewer stocks because you don't want as much sugar. You know, you right. want the more, you know, protein-based, less fewer carbs, etc. Yeah. So if you can cook, you can invest. It's the same thing. It's yeah. just the right mix.
Wow. And so let's talk about silver linings or trends that you see for 2009.
Trends that I'm looking at for 2009 are that people are going to, overall, the collective psyche, kind of get out of this bad news. People are going to shake off the bad news, I think. And I think that things will turn around. Interest rates being where they are right now, I think we should look for the light at the end of the tunnel by the end of 2009, just from everybody I've been talking to, who I really respect mm-hmm. in the world of economics, you know, academia. That's what most people really believe. Well, it will take a while to come back mm-hmm. and be, you know, hopefully it won't become another bubble.
Right.
Hopefully it will really ground us in a more realistic, sort of an approach, overall collective approach to investing, because there was too much speculation
right.
in
mm-hmm.
this market. And that's what happened. The leverage, it was crazy right. and it was unsustainable.
I guess one of the things when you're looking at the housing market and you know, how the housing market here in the Cape has, like everywhere else, taken a pretty good dip, it will come back, just like everything else. Eventually, it will come back. Hopefully,
time.
You don't have to sell right now.
Time. And that's what John Bogle is trying to say. You have to eat over your whole life and feed yourself over your whole life. Guess what? You have to invest, be it cash, real estate, stocks, bonds, over your entire life. So it's owning a house is not a speculation. And if you turn it into a speculation, guess what? You got a 50-50 chance of winning or losing, flip a coin. That's your house. So it becomes your biggest asset as long as you hold on to it and you own it and you give it time. House appreciation on homes here on the Cape, just average per year, typical, somewhere between 3% and 6% a
right.
year, not 20.
And we got so spoiled
30.
With that, thinking that
exactly.
this could, and of course it can't last forever.
Right.
Like you say, the
right.
bottom has to drop out of there
right.
at some point.
And what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
What's wrong with a house growing in value at 2% or 3% or 4% a year? What a beautiful thing,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah. And you live in that house, you own that house.
Let me ask you, since we're talking about houses and looking at the interest rate right now, this is, again, I guess looking at silver linings and opportunities, this is a great time, to think about refinancing, maybe going with a 15-year instead of a 30-year mortgage.
Oh, it's a fantastic opportunity. If you have the credit, you know, the credit of 680 or 720 credit score or above, you're in the power position. And with, you know, last time I was here, we were talking about how great it was that interest rates on mortgages were, you know, 6%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we're talking about being in the land of 4.5.
Right.
So it's a great time. It's a great opportunity.
Right. Now, when you mentioned earlier about this is the great opportunity to learn what you can about investing. And besides, a financial planner or something like that, what are ways people can learn more about how to invest wisely?
One of my favorite sources for basic information, and we give these away for free, is on a website called the Investor Protection Trust. And it's IPT, so it's investorprotection.org. And click on the basics of saving and investing, and there's Kiplinger had produced these in association with the IPT. And they're very, very basic, readable, quick little booklets about stocks, bonds, and, you know, there's like 7 booklets that discuss the approach to investing, the approach to retirement planning. They're free, downloadable. They're on our website as well, moneytrack.org. I also like MSN.com, MSN Money. I also like a site called Investopedia. It's like a compendium, so you can look things up. But as far as getting started, I really like those booklets.
Mm-hmm. And you should get started as soon as possible. So parents should start their children thinking about this when.
Oh, it's perfect. This is just all this attention on money and personal finance and investing and what not to do. It's just a great opportunity to enlighten your own children, you know, about what you're doing and start to bring them into conversations about money and concepts about borrowing. And the sooner you bring your own kids into those conversations, the more they'll ask questions. It will stimulate them. They'll really get interested.
Right. And as far as I know, we talked about the economy possibly showing signs of turning around a little bit end of 2009. What are your thoughts about what's happening in the stock market? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what are your feelings in the next few? So it can take a while for that to build itself back up as well.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, if you're really taking that long-term 50-year or 20-year, depending upon your age, mm-hmm. But if you're really looking at it like you have to invest over your entire life and not just in these 2-year spurts or 5-year, you know, with that kind of time horizon, you can take your time and you can really look for opportunities that, like I said, if you buy dividend paying stocks while you're waiting for the stock prices to come back up, you're getting paid a dividend mm-hmm. of something like, you know, in the order of 5, 6, 7, 8% a year. And that's while you're waiting for the market to come back.
All right. Pam Krueger, she's the producer and host of PBS's Money Track and author of The Money Track Method, a step-by-step guide to investing like the pros. As always, Pam, nice to see you. Thanks for being
here.
Can
I have my crystal ball back?
You may. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is hosted and produced by Mindy Todd. The executive producer is Steve Young. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.